Research credit on this particular article goes to a listener. This is from the Desert News of Salt Lake City, Utah, January 14th of 1987. This is an article by Richard Stengel about Adnan Khashoggi, the Saudi Arabian weapons dealer who was one of the principal figures in the Iran-Contra scandal. This article is entitled Khashoggi, Glitzy Center of a Shaky Universe, an appropriate title. And this describes one of Khashoggi's practices, apparently using beautiful female escorts for a number of political and espionage functions. As a businessman and a broker, Khashoggi has as a trademark the exquisite and exotic women who seem to hover around him. He has often been accused of hiring expensive call girls to seduce the men he is attempting to do business with. He amiably confesses to paying for escorts to liven up business functions. The women, he suggests, sweeten the deal. They lend beauty and fragrance to the surroundings, he says, while sitting on the terrace of his Marbella house overlooking Gibraltar. Marbella, incidentally, or Marbella, the stomping grounds of Manzer El Kassar, among others. They are also intelligent hostesses. I challenge anyone to come forward and prove that I ever told him the girls are available for sex, he says, with a smile and a wink. Such women served Khashoggi's purposes in other ways. In the 1970s, Khashoggi spent much time and money recruiting the escorts hired by the Shah of Iran in order to get information about the Iranians' military plans. The Shah was timid with women, Khashoggi says, and liked to impress them by telling them exciting secrets, unquote. Khashoggi himself coached the women on how to guide the conversation to areas of particular interest. They always came back with valuable intelligence, unquote. He says with a smile. Well, of course, among the beautiful and exotic, with the exquisite and exotic women, as the article says, grouped around Adnan Khashoggi, was the not the late great, just the great Donna Rice,
the simple and, country girl, Donna
yeah,
Rice.
Just plain old shucks, Donna Rice. And one of the people who is also draped around Donna Rice is Gary Hart, and whose name takes on an incredibly ironic significance under the circumstance. Mm. Anyway, Gary Hart, of course, trashed his candidacy via his dalliance with Donna Rice. One of the interesting things is that dalliance dealt a great deal of damage to the Democratic Party. It also served to overshadow, to a considerable extent, the first televised week of the Iran-Contra hearings in the spring of 1987.
And lest we should forget, Adnan Khashoggi was not only one of the middlemen on the original Iran deal, put together by Oliver North and his people, and Michael Ledeen and a whole galaxy of Reagan administration stars, but also Adnan Khashoggi has been mentioned several times in the current Italian Irangate scandal, the Valsella Meccanotecnica, for his various connections in terms of moving arms and things about of that nature. So the idea, which might initially seem far-fetched, that Adnan Khashoggi might want to bump the Iran-Contra case off of the front pages by the use of beautiful women in the dalliance of politicians, well, when you find out, A, what his interests in the Iran-Contra case were, and B, the fact that he has long used beautiful women and the dalliance of them with political officials for his purposes, it begins to seem less and less an extreme point of view and more to seem like the obvious conclusion to be drawn. We're going to talk about some other interesting folks, and we've got, boy, I'll tell you, this cast of characters, you could not duplicate this in Hollywood. People would say you were kidding.
Research credit on the following article also goes to the same listener as the previous one.
Indeed, and this one is from the Deseret News, which is, of course, published in Salt Lake City for Saturday, October 10th of 1987, although the article itself is a UPI Wire story. Its headline, Conservative Think Tank Says Plaques Contain Shredded D.C. Documents. And it goes like this. A conservative think tank is trying to raise funds by selling framed plaques containing shredded papers, letters, and memos the Utah organization says were Iran-Contra documents before being cut into fragments. The National Center for Constitutional Studies is asking $9.95 for the plaques titled Shredded Secrets from the White House, along with a summary biography of Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, the fired National Security Council aide. And the center claims, quote, the official souvenir of the Iran-Contra cover-up is an exceptional deal, quote, normally retailing for $14.95. A small plastic capsule attached to the plaque contains, quote, portions of documents shredded in the White House West Wing during the crucial final stages of the Iran-Contra cover-up attempt, says the group's promotional flyer. Quote, these shreddings were preserved by an anonymous staff member of the National Security Council, the mailed advertisement said. Center President Cleon Skousen was not available for comment. His personal secretary, Linda Richards, at first said Skousen's son, Paul, who was employed by the National Security Council, obtained the shredded documents. Richards later said Paul Skousen did not obtain the material. It was instead supplied by a Fairfax, Virginia company called Shredded Secrets. The telephone company said it has no listing for Shredded Secrets Company in the Washington, D.C. suburb. Skousen's son no longer works for the National Security Council, Richards said. Jane Thomas, a White House spokeswoman, confirmed he was employed by the NSC earlier this year. Well, a couple of things here. Obviously, since their name is the National Center for Constitutional Studies, based on the kinds of people that they have involved with them, maybe they should include little shredded replicas of the Constitution with their plaques, because shredding the Constitution seems to be what they're about. Center President Cleon Skousen is an interesting guy himself.
That tells you how constitutional this particular center is.
Indeed.
Skousen being a former FBI agent, veteran John Birch Society member, currently, I think, a member of the American Security Council, the chief American link with the World Anti-Communist League, and Cleon Skousen, a long-standing guidepost of the American far right.
Yeah, just recently in the news because of a book he wrote on the Constitution that had been bought by California school districts for the year of the Constitution, that talked about basically how the slaves took advantage of the slave owners and what a nice life the slaves led, and Shades of Evan Meekum, I believe, even referred to them as pickaninnies.
Yeah, I don't know if it referred to them as pickaninnies, but one of the things it suggested was that to the extent that the slave owners had to use brutality because of the large number of criminals and degenerates among the slave population.
Yeah, yeah. So those poor slave owners just absolutely forced to do terrible things. Anyway, Skousen's son's involvement with the National Security Council is rather interesting in light of some of the other people at some other famous families and things like that that have been involved, have been in the orbit of the National Security Council.
I guess one could say the family that slays together stays together. Fritz Kramer's son, Sven Kramer, has been retained by now Secretary of Defense, then NSC head, or top National Security Advisor Frank Carlucci, who we're going to talk about in a second. Friend Sven Kramer, the son of Fritz Kramer, chief of the plans office for the Pentagon, and at least in our opinion, based on research done by Mae Brussel, in all probability also the chief of staff of the 6th SS Panzer Army. This at a time when he was also serving in the U.S. Army.
A renaissance man, basically.
Truly, truly a renaissance man. Paula Dobriansky, the daughter of Lev Dobriansky, a former Reagan ambassador, a key member of the World Anti-Communist League, an affiliate of the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations.
Yes, one of the OUN Bandera Ukrainian Nazi terrorist type guys that the Reagan administration seems to like so much.
And it appears that for all of the apparent disruptions of business vis-a-vis the Iran-Contra scandal, things seem to roll on as usual with the Reagan administration, with sometimes distressing consequences for some of the people who oppose them. For research credit on the following story also goes to Mae Brussel. This is from the Washington Post of Monday, January 11th of 1988, concerns a Defense Department appointment favored by Frank Carlucci and opposed by a member of Congress. This is, again, from the Washington Post, 1/11/88. It's by David B. Ottaway of the Washington Post. Headline, Filling New Post, a Controversy for Carlucci. Subheaded, Special Operations Nominee Unsuitable, House Chairman says. Defense Secretary Frank C. Carlucci, less than 2 months on the job, is facing his first controversy over an appointment, Kenneth P. Berquist, a friend. Berquist was originally chosen by then-Secretary Caspar W. Weinberger to fill the new position of Assistant Secretary of Defense for Special Operations and Low-Intensity Conflict, a post so controversial in itself that Congress forced it on the Pentagon bureaucracy in October of 1986, interrupting obviously one which impinges very heavily on the covert operations world of the Iran-Contra scandal. I was just thinking, Shredded Secrets, Breakfast of Covert Operators, you know, harking back to that last article.
Yum!
Yeah, and that sounds like Kenneth B. Berquist's dish right here, as you hear more about him. After nearly 15 months after the legislation passed, setting up the new Pentagon post and a unified operations command, there is no Assistant Secretary of Defense, and a charter for the office has only just been approved. Berquist's nomination appears to be in deep trouble, and there is a chance the post will remain vacant until the end of the Reagan administration a year from now. Carlucci heartily endorsed Berquist for the position in a December 9th letter to the Senate Armed Services Committee. I wanted the committee to know that I fully support Kenneth Berquist's nomination to be Assistant Secretary of Defense, he wrote. Secretary Weinberger consulted with me when the nomination was being considered, and I urged him to select Ken. I know Ken Berquist very well. He is an able individual whose background in special operations qualifies him for the position, unquote. Carlucci, in an unusual gesture of support, sent his wife to Berquist's confirmation hearing before the Senate panel on December 10th. The hearing turned into a polite inquisition, with so many questions and veiled and a few not-so-veiled attacks on Berquist that the committee never voted on his nomination. When Congress went into recess, Berquist's nomination was returned to the White House, where its fate is being considered. The most devastating public attack on Berquist at the hearing came not from any senator, but from a key member of the House. Representative Dan Daniel, Democrat of Virginia, chairman of the House Armed Services, chairman of the House Armed Services Readiness Subcommittee and House author of the special operations legislation, was so upset that he came to testify, saying it was the first time in 20 years that he had decided to oppose a White House nomination. Again, first time in 20 years he's opposed a White House nomination. Berquist, he told the Senate committee, was, quote, unsuitable for the job from the standpoint of experience, from the standpoint of stature, from the standpoint of mental discipline, unquote. Berquist, he warned, would be working, quote, in a canal of turf sharks, unquote, at the Pentagon, and we simply do not have time for on-the-job training, unquote. Daniel's testimony shook Berquist's apparent supporters on the committee. Senator Steve Sims, Republican of Idaho, indicating some shock, said Daniel's strong words of opposition were, quote, going to have a lot of weight, unquote, with him. You may well be correct, he said. Well, he may well be correct, and this may be the first time in 20 years he ever opposed a White House nomination. He won't be appointing any more, will the late Representative Dan Daniel, congressman from Virginia. Research credit for the following story also goes to Mae Russell.
And it is from the Los Angeles Times for January 24th, 1988, and, well, I guess we gave away the ending. It's an obituary. Dan Daniel, congressman from Virginia. Charlottesville, Virginia, Dateline, UPI Wire story, Representative Dan Daniel, Democrat of Virginia, died Saturday at University of Virginia Hospital. He was 73. Hospital spokesman Tom Duran confirmed that Daniel died about 5:30 p.m. The congressman was admitted to the hospital earlier in the day, but officials initially did not say why. Well, because it's hard to list cause of death as being opposition to a White House nominee on the death certificate.
Shredded secrets, breakfast of covert operators, and a late congressman from Virginia who opposed the wrong nomination at the wrong time. Of course, obviously, he was 73. 73-year-olds do die of heart attacks. Ronald Reagan, 77, he hasn't died of a heart attack. He survived at least one assassination attempt. And, of course, as we've looked at in a number of different cases, the National Security Establishment has been able to give people heart attacks as well as a lot of other things for a long, long time. So was the late Dan Daniel, was it now live or was it Memorex in a sense?
We may be wrong about some of the heart attacks, folks, but there have been about 70 of them related to the Iran-Contra case in the last year and a half, and I sort of doubt we're wrong about all of them, you know?
They just don't take their aspirin.
Yeah, something like that.